Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for the weekend edition, Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Early college high school among top 200 schools in Texas, by Stuart Durain. Early College High School at Midland College is moving up the list of the top schools in the state of Texas. ECHS improved from a ranking of 519 last year to 195th this year, and was the top performing public high school in Midland, Odessa. The rankings also showed that total minority enrollment at ECHS is 87% and 49% are economically disadvantaged. Early College High School at Midland College also ranked 1,961st in the national rankings, according to U.S. News and World Report. MISD stated that was among the top 40% of schools nationwide. Midland's top-performing high schools finished behind some of the high schools one would expect to see on the list of Texas' best, including Highland Park, Westlake, and Austin, and suburban high schools in Katy, Frisco, and Coppell. The number one high school in Texas and eighth nationwide was the School for the Talented and Gifted in a Dallas ISD school. Also making the top 100, at least 15 early college high schools or college preps across the state, including campuses in Laredo, Brownsville, La Jolla, McAllen, Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, El Paso, Clint, Far San Juan, Alamo, and Tyler. The list of the top 100 high schools in Texas also included at least five schools from Young Women's Leadership Network, which operates Young Women's Leadership Academy in Midland. Those campuses included a number two school in the state, Inside Dallas ISD, and YWLA schools in San Antonio, Lubbock, Austin, and Houston. There were 13 IDEA public school campuses among the top 100 in the state. IDEA operates a campus that currently goes through 7th grade in Midland and will begin the 8th grade next year. There are hopes by many in Midland that the school board will approve allowing IDEA Travis to eventually go through 12th grade. IDEA campuses in the 100, or according to U.S. News and World Report, included Edinburgh, Brownsville, McAllen, Austin, San Antonio, Farr, Edinburgh, Mission, Weslaco, Donna, San Juan, and San Benito. None of the third future schools went beyond the 8th grade during the 2021-22 school year, according to its website. Midland High and Legacy High School both ranked between 1,213th and 481st in the Texas rankings. George H.W. Bush, New Tech in Odessa, ranked 255th. Odessa Career Technical Early College ranked 1,812, and Odessa High ranked between 1,213 and 1,481st. Trail, start of quality of life transformation. It is with great joy that we announce the grand opening of the Midland Trail Park from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The first of its kind in Midland, the park will sport 8 miles of multi-use trail, two more on the way, a skills area for advanced cyclists, an 18-hole disc golf course, a unique biosphere, and the best water feature that you will find in all West Texas. Four-legged friends are welcome. Come out and see some of the best bird watching in the area while relaxing under some of Midland's largest trees. Harris Field and the Midland Trail Park is yet another example of how Midland shines through our public and private partnerships. The West Texas Trail Alliance, Permian Basin Bicycling Association, and various local philanthropists and donors have worked together to make the park a reality. This new facility will cost the taxpayers no money and will be a great step to improving all our collective quality of life. We invite you all to head out and experience it for yourselves. We also want to share with you that the Midland Trail Park is the beginning of a new vision for health and quality for life for all Midlanders. As part of the vision of the current Midland City Council, the city is planning to add hike and bike paths along our draw system as we expand it for more drainage capacity. This will happen gradually in small stages as we repair, replace, and expand the draws throughout Midland. You'll see the first phase of this planned development in southeast Midland, heading south along the Scarborough Draw from Ray's Mashburn Nelms Park. Ultimately, we envision that the Midland Trail Park will eventually connect to Scarborough Draw, over time creating what could be a first-rate hike and bike trail. Such a trail could connect the new park with a newly improved Hogan Park, a downtown cultural and entertainment district, which are currently in the works, and eventually to the Wildcatter Trail, which will run from UTPB in Odessa to the sports complex in Midland. This initial development of the Midland Trail Park project would not have been possible without the leadership of Stephen Mitchell, who has worked countless hours through rain, wind, and dust to make sure the trails are perfect. Stephen and the Permian Basin Bicycle Association were responsible for raising more than $150,000 for construction of the facilities. Anyone interested in coming to the park will be expected to pay a $35 annual fee per family to the Permian Basin Bicycle Association and will go toward the ongoing maintenance of the park. Payment can be made at Midland Trail Park or at their website. We would also like to thank our private and corporate sponsors for their help in making this dream a reality. A special thanks to Carrie and Joe Brown, Bob and Elizabeth Davenport, Diamondback Energy, Jones Brothers Dirt and Paving, SM Energy, VIM Racing, J.D. King Construction, Plains Pipeline, and LOA Land Development. Access to the park is located at 3215 Farm to Market 307, the Greenwood Highway, with the entrance located adjacent to the west of Harris Field Fire Training Center. Cops arrest man for injuring one-year-old. A Midland man was arrested Tuesday for allegedly recklessly injuring a one-year-old child. James Walker is being charged with a state felony charge of injury to a child, elderly or disabled individual, with reckless bodily injury and three other misdemeanor charges of assault, bodily injury, family violence, unlawful restraint, and possession of marijuana under 2 ounces. Police officers were dispatched at 2 a.m. on Tuesday in reference to a disturbance. Dispatch advised that the caller stated a man, identified as Walker, was beating her. When officers arrived on scene, they heard yelling and items being thrown around inside the apartment. Walker had a strong smell of alcohol, opened the door, according to the affidavit. Officers noticed the woman had a bloody nose and scratches to her right side of her face. The officer also noticed a large bump and bruise on the left side of her one-year-old child. The woman told officers Walker began hitting her after he became angry when he couldn't find his cigarettes and started to accuse her of having what he was looking for. During the assault, the woman was holding her one-year-old. She stated during many times Walker punched her, he hit hard enough that she bumped the child's head. She also fell back and lost consciousness for a couple of seconds after being hit. The woman stated she tried to leave, but Walker blocked her. She also stated she never hit him back and was fixing to pepper spray him, but I couldn't find my pepper spray. Walker's being held in Midland County Jail on a total bond of $16,000. Sheriff's Office searches for a fugitive wanted for sexual assault of a child. Midland Crime Stoppers is offering a reward for any information that leads to the arrest of a man wanted for aggravated sexual assault of a child. The Sheriff's Office is searching for fugitive David Bonilla for aggravated sexual assault, a grand jury indictment. If you make an official Crime Stoppers tip via the hotline, website, or a mobile app that leads to the arrest of Bonilla, you will be eligible for a $500 cash reward. No caller ID is ever used, and you will remain anonymous. Drillers add 28 rigs, continue the record rise. The nation's rig count continued to inch higher as robust commodity prices and calls for additional output spur drillers to return to action. Baker Hughes, which has been tracking the rig count, said Friday the rig count rose by 3 to 698. The company said the rig count has risen for a record 21 consecutive months. There are more than 258 rigs running, 59% more at work this time than last month. The number of rigs drilling for crude rose by 3 to 552. Operators added 21 rigs in April and have added rigs for 20 consecutive months. Texas saw its rig count dip by one rig to 345. New Mexico added two for 97. The most active drillers are Continental Resources and Hess Whiting Petroleum, Orin IV, ConocoPhillips, Oasis Petroleum, and Marathon Oil are each running two rigs. At this time last year, only Continental, Hess, and Marathon had multiple rigs at work in the basin.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Saturday, April 30th, 2022. Chevron to ramp up output. Company to produce about 725,000 barrels in Permian daily, by Kevin Crowley, Bloomberg. Chevron Corporation lifted its production target in North America's biggest oil field in a sign that U.S. shale is responding to $100 a barrel crude, despite rising cost pressures and equipment shortages. Chevron will produce at least 15% more from the Permian Basin this year compared with 2021, for a total output of about 725,000 barrels of oil daily, the company said in an investor presentation on Friday. That's up from the previous plan for a 10% increase in the region. The second largest U.S. driller joins Continental Resources Incorporated, Hess Corporation, and Matador Resources Company in signaling plans to boost shale production amid sky-high crude and gas prices. "We are seeing some cost increases in the Permian, but it's very manageable," Chief Financial Officer Pierre Breber said during an interview. Chevron is now back on the trajectory that we were on pre-COVID in the biggest U.S. shale basin. President Joe Biden implored oil companies to reinvest profits from surging oil prices into more production in an effort to tamp down on rampant inflation. Chevron's announcement, combined with their smaller peers, show that the industry may be willing to increase supplies, even though there are steep labor and equipment shortages. Chevron's stock declined 2.4% to $157.91 at 1:53 p.m. in New York trading. Brent crude is up about 40% this year to $107 because of Russia's growing international isolation following its invasion of Ukraine, while natural gas also posted steep gains, especially in Europe. The big question is whether the industry is willing and able to counter the withdrawal of Russian energy from global markets. "There is a supply response happening," Breber said. "It's just lagging what's been very strong demand." Chevron's capital expenditure is pegged at about $15 billion this year, a 50% increase on 2021, but less than half the levels of a decade ago when prices last were consistently around the $100 mark. The company currently plans to buy back $10 billion of shares this year, a record high. "We could have a bigger buyback program right now," Breber said. "We want to size it to a level where we can maintain it when the cycle does turn, and we expect the cycle will turn at some point in time." Natural gas prices climb back above $7 per MCF, by Mella McEwen. Commodity prices took a break from recent volatile trading sessions during a trading week that didn't see the wild swings experienced in the early days of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and China's lockdown of millions of people amid a COVID-19 resurgence. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange ended April with a 4.4% gain, marking the fifth consecutive monthly increase and the longest streak of monthly gains since January 2018. WTI rose 3 of 5 trading days, overcoming Monday's $3.53 loss that pushed prices below $100 a barrel, with a $3.16 rebound Tuesday and a $3.34 gain Thursday. Prices fell 67 cents Friday to end the week at $104.69, up from $98.54 at Monday's close and from $102.07 at last Friday's close. The posted price closed the week at $101.17, according to Plains All American. Natural gas had a strong week, rising 4 of 5 trading days. Henry Hub prices on NYMEX began the week rising 13 cents, followed by an additional 18 cents Tuesday and a 23-cent rise Wednesday. That, combined with a 35.6-cent climb Friday, was enough to overcome a 45-cent drop Thursday. Gas prices closed Friday at $7.22 per MCF, up from $6.669 at Monday's close and $6.53 at last Friday's close. WTI is in a trading range between $120 and $94. The price is totally news dependent. Mickey Cargill of Cargill Investment Management Incorporated told the Reporter Telegram by email, "I expect prices to stay in this range unless Russian oil is disrupted. The rise to price is global recession. The prospects for the oil industry and the West Texas economy remain positive." He went on to note that crude inventories continue to decline as demand exceeds current production. OPEC Plus maintains their plan to add 400,000 barrels per day every month, but have been unable to meet the higher production allowance. U.S. production is expected to increase about $800 BPD this year. While Russian oil is sanctioned, it has been removed from the world market, Cargill added. Cargill predicted U.S. rig count growth from this point will be marginal as the availability of infrastructure, such as frac crews, are operating at maximum capacity. Strengthening natural gas prices helped boost production in 2021, with the Energy Information Administration reporting 3 producing regions drove output increases last year. Appalachia at 31%, the Permian Basin at 16%, and Haynesville at 12%. Collectively, the 3 basins accounted for 59% of gross withdrawals, the most comprehensive measure of gas production, compared with 24% in 2011. The EIA said Permian Basin gas production grew by 1.4 billion cubic feet per day to 18.3 BCF in 2021, as associated gas, which is produced from oil wells, grew throughout the year. Crude is rallying with demand concerns perceived to be short-term, while supply concerns are persistent, Rebecca Babin, senior energy trader at CIBC Private Wealth Management, told Bloomberg. Next week will be critical as we will get official selling prices from Saudi as a good litmus test for how much demand is suffering in China. Bloomberg also noted that as the path toward a potential embargo on Russian oil has grown clearer, the oil market structure has firmed. On Thursday, West Texas Intermediate was traded in its widest backwardation, a structure that indicates tight supply, in a month.
Deborah O'Brien Butts passed away on April 20th. A celebration of life was held in Burney on April 25th. To leave condolences for the family and to view a video of Deborah's life, visit ebensberger-fisher.com. Arrangements are with Ebensberger Fisher Funeral Home of Burney. Catherine Horn passed away on April 15th. Chapel funeral services will be held May the 2nd at the Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home in Midland. Viewing will begin at 9 a.m. and chapel service will begin at 10. Funeral service is under the direction of Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A.D. Davis passed away on April 21st. Visitation will be Monday, May the 2nd from 12 noon until 5 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be on Tuesday, May 3rd at 11 a.m. at Ebenezer Missionary Baptist Church. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez Funeral Home. Gloria Annette Holder passed away on April 25th. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. Jacqueline Cooper passed away on April 21st. Graveside service will be held on Saturday, May 7th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. The arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. Pilar Melendez passed away on April 28th. Viewing will be Monday, May 2nd from 1 to 9 p.m. and Tuesday, May 3rd from 9 to 9, with a rosary to be recited at 7 on Tuesday at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral set is Wednesday, May 4th at 11 a.m. at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
This is Jane reading for the Odessa American on Saturday, April 30th. Ector County death stats, a mixed bag. Suicides, mental health issues keep healthcare workers busy. PermiaCare crisis worker Billy Alexander is a busy man. Every month, the PermiaCare Crisis Unit evaluate more than 100 Ector County residents who are struggling with mental health and or substance abuse issues. The three-member unit visits them in their homes, in hospitals, and in schools. 90% of them are suicidal, Alexander said. There was a time when most of the people they were evaluating were adults. Not anymore, he said. Hardly a day goes by that we don't see a kid, and that's new. That's just been within the last year or two, Alexander said. For the last 20 years, his job has been to determine if people in crisis are a danger to themselves or others. In other words, if they need to be hospitalized or simply referred to mental health experts. He and his colleagues get called in by law enforcement officers, hospital employees, and school administrators. Sometimes the people are behaving irrationally, talking about suicide, or acting out of character. Other times, they've landed in the hospital after overdosing on drugs, crashing their vehicles while under the influence, or attempting to commit suicide. The people there are struggling, Alexander said. The kids he sees are struggling with bullying or their sexual identity, schoolwork, or a dysfunctional family, or a combination of all. The adults have often lost their jobs, their families, and their homes. Many of those he visits have mental health issues. We've dealt with kids as young as 7 years old who are dealing with mental health, Alexander said. There's probably not a school in the basin that we've not been over to in the last few years. Too often, Alexander said, both groups are turning to drugs and alcohol to cope. The Ector County Medical Examiner's Office often sees the impact of drugs, alcohol, and depression. According to records obtained under Texas Public Information Act 86, Ector County residents committed suicide from 2019 to 2021. Another 64 died as a result of vehicle crashes involving impaired drivers, and 93 died as a result of drug overdoses. A handful of people accidentally met their deaths without getting behind the wheel. One man bled to death after accidentally stabbing or cutting himself several times, and a couple of men suffered fatal injuries after falling. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, suicide is a 10th leading cause of death in the United States. In 2020, nearly 46,000 Americans killed themselves, and an estimated 12.2 million adults seriously thought about it. The number of people who think about or attempt suicide is even higher, according to the CDC. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, about 28 people in the United States die in drunk driving crashes every day, one person every 52 minutes. In 2019, more than 10,000 people died in drunk driving crashes. As for drug-related crashes, the Governor's Highway Safety Association reports 43.6% of fatally injured drivers in 2016 tested positive for drugs, and over half of those drivers were positive for two or more drugs. Unless the drivers have left notes or voiced their intentions, it's difficult to say how many of them were trying to commit suicide. But Alexander said he can speak to that anecdotally. In talking with people at the hospital, a lot of their plans were to commit suicide by wreck. They intended to commit suicide by running into a pole or something, Alexander said. As for overdoses, Alexander said he'll occasionally speak with hospital patients who say they accidentally took too many pills because they were dealing with insomnia or pain. But the bigger majority of them have done it on purpose. They say they hope to die. Ron Ng spent 25 years with the Odessa Police Department, including several years in the homicide unit. Now the chief investigator for the Ector County Medical Examiner's Office, Ng investigates those cases in which someone dies without witnesses and the cause and manner of death aren't obvious. Ng's biggest issue right now is the increase in fentanyl-related deaths. Our drug abuse cases are going through the roof, especially the fentanyl cases, Ng said. Fentanyl is a synthetic opioid 100 times stronger than morphine, and according to the medical examiner's office, the youngest fentanyl overdose victim from 2019 to 2021 was a 12-year-old boy. Two other 15-year-old boys also died after taking fentanyl. The bluish-green pills are coming from China via Mexico, and because there is no quality control, he's heard 25 to 30% of the pills contain a lethal dose of the drug. If you take 2 grains of salt out of a pile on a table, that's a lethal dose. He recalls one case in which a young man, maybe 20 or 21, took one fentanyl pill and was fine, although disappointed he wasn't getting high enough. He took another pill and died. Particularly disturbing is the fact that people are literally dying the first time they've ever taken an illicit substance, if that substance happens to be fentanyl, Ng said. Fentanyl has gone crazy. I've never seen such an influx. PermiaCare's Alexander said the key to helping people is to listen and watch them and to remind them there are people available to help. Sudden changes in behavior can indicate depression or substance abuse issues, and talk of suicide should never be dismissed as melodramatic or typical teenager angst, Alexander said. Brian Wingfield, a therapist with Samaritan Counseling, agreed. A lot of times when people are in depression, they tend to isolate from others, and a lot of them, before they make a suicidal attempt, make comments and statements that people have dismissed, or they were slightly alarmed, but they didn't take action on, Wingfield said. Those comments could be something along the lines of, I hate life, or I wish I wasn't alive. There are other red flags, too. If someone has been real depressed for a long time, and suddenly one day their life is good, that's a red flag that they've made their mind up that they're going to commit suicide, Alexander said. Another warning sign is the gifting of personal belongings. There are a lot of cases where you can look back and think, the red flags were there, so there's a real potential to save lives if you call attention to the behaviors, Wingfield said. If parents suspect their child is using drugs, Wingfield suggested they speak to them about the dangers of doing so. Unfortunately, teenagers, because their brains haven't fully developed yet, tend to engage in impulsive, risky behavior, he said. For information or support, one can call PermiaCare at 1-844-420-3964. The Texas Youth Helpline, call or text 1-877-661-3661. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. This is Jane reading for the Odessa American for April 30th. A little bit country, a little bit rock and roll. Grand Ole Opry theme of OHS Legacy Show. Bronco Legacy will take on a country western flavor for their spring show, set for May 6th and 7th at 7:30 at the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. The theme is Grand Ole Opry. A pre-show dinner featuring burgers and all the fixins will be provided by the Chuckwagon Gang at 6 p.m. Ticket prices are $20 for the Chuckwagon Dinner, $15 for premier seating, $10 for reserved seating, and $5 for students and children. Head choir director Ginger Story said a lot of the songs will have a country western flair, but there will still be some rock and pop numbers performed by the soloists. There are 14 vocalists, 4 managers, and 1 sound guy, Story said. Members have to audition to be part of the Bronco Legacy and academically eligible to participate. We have a live band that includes Karen Eichner and Jacob Garcia, Isaiah Cisneros, Johnny Saldivar, and Caleb Williams, Story said. The drummer, Cisneros, is in the OHS band Drumline. The group has been rehearsing since January. We've already performed some of the songs. We did the Permian Basin Rehab Center telethon that was aired over this weekend, but we had to video it back in February. So 2 of the songs that they performed as a group are in the show. And then we also opened for Foreigner last week. All 3 of those songs are in the show, Story said. She said the country songs aren't more difficult to sing. The more straightforward traditional ones aren't too hard at all. Our a cappella piece is probably the most difficult because it has a lot of really tight harmonies in it. That's not a country song, it's kind of a gospel song, Story said. The students didn't balk at singing country. They're enjoying it, I think, because the songs they're singing are fun. Our opener is Seven Bridges Road, and that's really an Eagles song, but it's been covered by a country artist, Story said. This is Jane reading from the Odessa American for April 30th. Finish XL Pipeline, Paxton. Other AGs tell Biden. Canadian-American line would help lower gasoline prices, they say. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton wants construction on the $8 billion Keystone XL Pipeline resumed, and 15 attorneys general from around the nation agree with him. Having written an April 18th letter to President Joe Biden, they've taken the president to task for signing an executive order on his first day in office to shutter the project. Permian Basin Petroleum Association President Ben Shepard, Congressman August Pfluger, Panhandle Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Judy Stark of Amarillo, and Texas Pipeline Association President Thur Cannon applaud Paxton and the others for trying to boost North American energy production in light of the global shortages fomented by the war in Ukraine. It was a real tragedy that Biden canceled the pipeline because America and the world need all the oil and gas we can get right now, Shepard said. Anything we can do to produce, transport, and sell our natural resources, we should do. I don't think the XL would necessarily have a direct impact on West Texas intermediate crude oil, but it would certainly help alleviate the supply problems that the country is having. Shepard said the energy industry was grievously disappointed when Biden reversed former President Trump's approval of the XL, of which only 8% has been completed. It would have been opened in the first quarter of next year. Separately, the Keystone Pipeline runs from the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin in Alberta Providence to Cushing, Oklahoma, and it has been in operation since 2010. Asked if there's a chance Biden will relent, Shepard said, "We've been getting mixed signals from this administration, but the need has really been highlighted by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It has put the energy needs of not just the U.S., but also our allies in the spotlight. Some in the administration would see that more supply would lower prices for consumers, but others continue to say, let's keep it all in the ground, which is unrealistic. There's an enormous demand for oil and gas that will continue for decades." Paxton was joined in his letter by the attorneys general of 16 other states. New record high gas prices are seemingly set every day. Economy-wide inflation, the highest in 40 years, is straining the budgets of American families, and European countries are unable to impose oil and gas sanctions on Russia without risking an economic recession, they wrote. Instead, European countries are spending $1 billion per day on Russian oil and gas and literally funding Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine in the process. Now reports indicate that your administration is seeking to import more oil from Canada. However, there is little capacity in existing pipelines, leaving you with few, if any, viable options. The oil you now want to import from Canada is the same oil that would have flowed through the Keystone XL pipeline, transporting nearly 1 million barrels per day to American refineries, not only from Canada, but also from the Bakken oil fields in Montana and North Dakota. The hypocrisy would be stunning if it weren't so insulting to American energy workers and those in rural communities who benefited from the pipeline's many economic opportunities, the Attorney General said. Coddling your radical environmental base has led us to the current crisis. The time for waffling and doublespeak has passed. The time for leadership has come, and the path forward is clear. Stark was pessimistic that the letter would have any effect. I don't think the XL is going to take place during this administration, she said, referring to the Canadian corporation that was building it, Stark said. The owners of TC Energy are probably not interested in starting it back up. The environmentalists would still fight against it, and it would be quite a controversy. The Biden administration is constantly saying they have 9,000 permits to drill on federal lands, but having the lands open to drill doesn't mean you will be able to. They talk about these things, but in the end, do they delay the permitting? Yes, they do. The biggest problems have been the jobs that were killed and our inability to bring in oil from our allies. Cannon said world events have highlighted the need for energy security and energy independence. This is Jane reading for the Saturday, April 30th, Odessa American. Permian Basin Literacy Summit coming up. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin will host a literacy summit from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Tuesday at the Ward County Event Center in Monahans. The Literacy Coalition, in partnership with Abel Hanger Foundation, FMH Foundation, Prentice Farrar and Allied Ford Brown Foundation, and the Permian Strategic Partnership, is inviting literacy stakeholders in the community to join this first annual Permian Basin Literacy Summit. At this summit, Literacy Coalition and partner agencies will reveal the findings of the first-of-its-kind literacy study performed in the Permian Basin, a press release stated. The study includes interviews with higher education providers, school districts, adult literacy providers, and adult learners. The most up-to-date research findings on low literacy and its effect on families and our economy will be addressed. Steve Banta, President of Literacy Texas, Mark Palmer, Chairman of the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, Courtney Wardlaw, XTO Energy, Andrea Messick from Midland ISD, and State Representative Brooks Landgraf of Odessa will be on hand. Introductions will be made by Executive Director of the Literacy Coalition, John Trichetti III, who is also an MISD board member, and Mark Palmer is the chairman of the coalition. Leticia Martinez, and development coordinator, said presentation of the data will come from Trent Sharp from the American Institutes for Research. They are the ones that performed a lot of the studies with providers of services, along with some adult learners, ISDs, and higher education. There's been a whole lot of research that's been conducted locally, Martinez said. What they found was that not only is there is not enough data on literacy, there's not anything locally for data, so they commissioned a study to get local data, Martinez said. The organization covers a 22-county service area that includes 3 counties in eastern New Mexico and 19 in the Permian Basin, West Texas, and the Trans-Pecos. Martina said what was found during the pandemic is that huge percentages of adults lack the ability to read even above a third grade level. This was coming from potential employers, educators, and people that provide services to these adults. It affects each and every one of us in one way or another, whether that means we get our prescription from the doctor and we can't read how we're supposed to take it, which often affects our health, or if someone can't read a road sign and they hit a bridge, for example, that impacts us all, Martinez said. People that are in poverty have a lower percentage of literacy, as well as those that are incarcerated, she added. It also affects potential employers and employees if someone can't fill out a job application or they don't have a high school diploma or equivalency and can't be promoted. The summit will pull together stakeholders that have a vested interest in literacy rates. According to the Barbara Bush Foundation, Texas ranks 48 out of 50 in terms of literacy, and New Mexico is at 47. So we're both in similar situations in terms of the need to improve, Martinez said. Then you start to see other factors that come into play, like the fact that a lot of this area is rural and the fact that accessibility is an issue because there aren't very many providers. And in some counties, there are no providers. She said the coalition is not necessarily there to provide the class, but to increase capacity for existing programs or find providers that can provide the classes where there are no providers.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing to read additional inside stories from the Odessa American, published Saturday, April 30th. Odessa woman reported missing. The Ector County Sheriff's Office is asking for the public's help in finding a 65-year-old woman who hasn't been heard from since February. ECSO investigator Heidi Zavala said a relative of Wilmalia P. Rosen, who lives outside Ector County, called the sheriff's office April 22nd asking deputies to check on Rosen because she hadn't been able to reach her on the phone. The two spoke periodically, and the last time they had spoken was sometime in February, and at that time, Rosen was depressed, Zavala said. When deputies went to Rosen's home in the 7300 block of Hughes Lane, she wasn't home, Zavala said. Anyone with information about Rosen is asked to call Zavala at 432-335-3050 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS. The case number is 22-E1659. Local News Roundup. Odessan arrested on aggravated assault charges. An Odessa man was arrested on aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after his sister told police he threatened her with a gun and a knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, John Alexander Almendarez's daughter called 911 around 12:40 a.m. April 23rd to report her father was going crazy and threatening to hurt her mom. She also said her father, 37, had slapped her aunt. When officers arrived to their home in the 6100 block of Mesa Street, the aunt flagged an officer down. She told the officer her brother and sister-in-law had been arguing because her brother had been flirting with the waitress at a bar. When she tried to mediate once they got home, the woman told officers he pulled out a gun, pulled the slide back, and pointed it at her, the report stated. Her brother put the gun away, but then slapped her, grabbed a knife, and then came at her with the knife pointed at her, the woman told police. Officers spoke to other witnesses who corroborated the aunt's version of events, and Almendarez was booked into the Ector County Jail. He was released later the same day on a $30,000 surety bond. man accused of stealing $11,000. An Odessa oil field equipment rental company lost more than $11,000 recently after being scammed via email. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, an employee of Jack of Oil Trades told an investigator she sent a $5,700 payment to what she thought was an Arkansas fuel company on March 18th, and then a second payment for the same amount on April 5th. The employee later heard from the fuel company that they had not received any payments. Their emails had been hacked, and Jack of Oil Trades may have been scammed out of the money, the report stated. When she looked at the email, she discovered the emails she had received with account information was different than the actual billing personnel's email. Jack of Oil Trades is working with its bank to try to get their funds back, and the ECSO is attempting to find the owner of the email account. Teenager arrested in connection with nail salon robbery. An Odessa teenager wanted in connection with the February nail salon robbery was arrested Friday around noon by Odessa Police Department officers and the department SWAT team. According to an OPD news release, Isaac Burford was taken into custody at a home in the 1300 block of North Whitaker on two counts of aggravated robbery and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. Jail records show he was also arrested on a possession of a controlled substance charge. According to online jail records, he's being held on two bonds of $100,000 each.
This is Jane reading from the Saturday, April 30th, Odessa American, from the obituaries. In Midland, Gerald Sandman Sparks, Jr., 61, passed from this life on April 26th in Midland. He was born on March 1st, 1961, to Gerald Sr. and Joanne Sparks in Odessa. Those left to cherish his memories are sons Blake Sparks of Midland and Mason Sparks of San Antonio, and many grandchildren. He is preceded in death by both parents, Gerald and Joanne Sparks, son Bradley Sparks, brother Stephen Sparks, and sister Rebecca Darnell Sparks. A memorial service will be held Monday, May 2nd at 1 p.m. at Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa. Condolences can be made online at acreswestfuneral.com. This is Jane reading for this Saturday, April 30th, Odessa American, from the Death Notice section. In Odessa, Gloria Annette Holder, 80, died on Monday, April 25th. Services are pending with American Heritage of Midland. Juan Manuel Lozano, 74, of Odessa, died on Wednesday, April 27th. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, May 3rd, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Father Carlos Rodriguez is officiating. Arrangements are made by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Raul Jimenez Prieto, 73, of Odessa, died on Wednesday, April 27th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Home of Odessa. Joanne Reeves, 79, of Odessa, died on Thursday, April 28th. Memorial service will be held at 7 p.m., May 2nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Roy Ortega Tijerina, 84, of Odessa, died on Tuesday, April 26th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. April 30th at Parkview Church of Christ. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
Good morning. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, May 1st, 2022. Five prayers for our city set for Thursday. Human trafficking, drug addiction, other concerns to be addressed. Odessa needs prayer, and three elected officials have organized a Five Prayers for Our City event to coincide with the May 5th National Day of Prayer. With special attention to young people, Mayor Javier Hoven and City Council members Denise Swanner and Mark Mata are combining to address human trafficking, drug addiction, public education, abuse and neglect, and mental health and suicide. There will be a speaker on each topic, and then a minister or a professional will lead a prayer from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on Thursday, May 5th, in Ballroom D at the MCM Grande Hotel and Fun Dome at 6201 Business I-20. A poster is being circulated that quotes Proverbs 11:11, saying, "Through the blessing of the upright, a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked, it is destroyed." Mata, the city's District 1 councilman, said teenagers' quandaries are often minimized by adults, but they should be taken seriously because their word is pretty small and it resolves around themselves. Some of our youth have hard time because adults tend to play their problems down as minor or little, Mata said. "We see them as small problems, but they see them as big. There are some of the hot topics, not in our city, but also in our schools." The event is being sponsored by the City of Odessa. The speakers will be as follows: Human Trafficking, ECISD Trustee Chris Stanley and Reverend Tina Gillum, founder of the Basin Dream Center of Orphans in Midland. Drug Addiction, Springboard Center Development and Marketing Director Paul Caldwell of Midland and Reverend Ty Cook, pastor of the Rock Church. Public Education, District 15 State Board of Education, public nominee Aaron Kinsey, and Travis Elementary School Principal Amy Russell. Abuse and Neglect, Harmony Home Children's Advocacy Center Executive Director Carrie Braunham and Reverend Shai Lane, Associate Pastor of Hope Christian Fellowship. Mental Health and Suicide, Licensed Professional Counselor Brian Dodd, and a minister to be named. The event is being sponsored by an investment corp of American Paul Evans Carpet and Flooring and Odessa Headlines, News That Matters. Registration is at tinyurl.com/MVEU4JSP. GT program set for changes. Ector County ISD's Gifted and Talented program has undergone revisions, but some things will stay the same. Numbers haven't been finalized, but going into this year, the district has 1,032 elementary students identified as GT, 774 in middle school, and 964 in high school. Kindergarten will continue to start services after identification as GT on March 1st, which is per state law, Director Advanced Academic Kristen Vesley said. Everybody else will start first within their first month of school. First grade and second grade will be served through inclusion, meaning the cluster teacher. The teacher of record, will differentiate for giftedness. For third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and then two campuses that have six grades will be served through pullout, Vesley said. We'll have a GT certified teacher go and pull them on campus, and they'll provide some GT programming for them at these locations. This year, we had three campuses that were full inclusion, meaning their students were never pulled out. Those campuses will go back to being inclusion and pull out. We won't have any full inclusion campuses any longer. We'll actually be able to have the personnel to pull the students and to treat all the campuses similarly, she added. Beasley said they're changing their personnel a little bit. In our feedback survey from the teachers, they felt they were not supported. They didn't really know what they were doing, and they just weren't confident. To help build their capacity with gifted students, those specialists will go into the classes and offer the real-time on-the-job training and support. Because they're dedicated to just those three grade levels, we'll really be able to build the capacity of the first and second grade teachers before the kindergarten teachers come on with their students in March, Beasley said. She added that they will also have secondary specialists who are going to start supporting teachers in secondary schools. One of the main focuses for the advisory committee next year will be secondary GT services, figuring out what can be improved and how they can be better served. There also will be a middle school campus, SIP, this summer. SIP stands for School in Progress. The really exciting thing for me is at the high school level, our advanced CTE classes are now going to be able to be in place where our GT students are served, because not all of our GT students are college bound. They're not really all going in that direction. This gives them the opportunity to still be supported, to still work on those GT skills, to have the SEL component, but it's just to be in the CTE advanced classes, she said. An advanced class will have two prerequisites. Veasley said the advanced CTE students were only served previously in the four core subjects, math, science, social studies, and English. If they weren't successful, or their parents really saw that they were struggling and they decided this is not really worth it, then they would exit the students. So the student would choose to let go of their GT designation just because they didn't want to be in those advanced classes anymore, she said. This way, even if AB or IB, Advanced Placement International Baccalaureate, is not the direction they want to go, they can still get served as GT students. Veasley said they will have 8 specialists. She's not sure how they're going to be divided. It's going to depend on who allies the majority of them with the student. Because we have to support 28 campuses in those grade levels, we will figure out how to make it work. And once we do, then we'll know if we need more people, because we're looking at 2 grade levels on 28 campuses, Veasley said. The program will use the same 21 positions it already had. We just kind of reconfigure. Our pullout changed, so this year we pulled out this whole day, she said. Next year, students will be pulled out for 2 hours. Full day is kind of a misnomer, because most of them would start between 8:30 and 9 o'clock, and then would go back to their classes at 2:30. In there, they have PE, they have lunch, they have any specialties that would have to be pulled back into the school. By the time we get it all done, on average, it was only about 2 hours anyway. So we're just kind of getting rid of the wasted time, and we're looking at making sure it's quality that's happening so we can keep the kids in higher rigor for a couple of hours with some brain breaks in there to make it much easier and more efficient than trying to keep them there for 4.5 to 6 hours, Veasley said. She added the teachers will have more time with students to pull some students individually and work on talent developing on plans with them. Asked if they were looking to hire more GT teachers, Veasley said they can't. We won't be able to hire any for the coming year. We're going to evaluate after this year and see if there's a need, she said. She added she's hoping that we'll have a chance to gain more personnel. Right now, we have a very strong parent voice at GT and a very strong parent support. We're hoping to continue that until next year, get some parent advocacy groups organized. We want to start our parent advisory committee because we have our steering advisory committee that has some parents on it, but would like a parent advisory where it's all parent voices and there's no district personnel, Veasley said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.